Welcome to Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. On today's Fresnolandia, we have Fresnoland reporter Omar S. Rashad here to talk today about potential federal cuts to Medicaid, which is also known as Medi-Cal in California, and what they could mean for Valley residents, and specifically in Fresno and Madera County. Omar, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we're talking to Omar for a lot of reasons, but if you are even remotely paying attention to the news, you may have heard on social media or in the headlines and national news about a proposal to cut $880 billion out of the federal budget, out of the Medicaid budget. Medicaid is the main federal program that is used to support help paying for health insurance, specifically for people who are lower income across the country. And this cut has been proposed as a way to help extend tax cuts that President Trump wants to extend for wealthy Americans across the country. So Omar, you've been talking with experts and health providers and diving into the data on who relies on Medi-Cal in the Central Valley. And I just want to hear from you first, who's going to be hit the hardest if these cuts do end up getting approved?
Yeah. I think health providers, experts, even folks on Medi-Cal are really worried about how cuts to Medicaid will, at the end of the day, either impact who is eligible and who can be enrolled in Medicaid or Medi-Cal. And they're also really worried about how cuts could impact financial stability for hospitals, for rural clinics, for even health centers. And I think when we think of the Valley and we think of Fresno County, a lot of the communities here actually really depend on Medi-Cal.
And why is Fresno County and the Valley ground zero when people are talking about the cuts? There's been reporting in the New York Times that's talked about many congressional districts in the Central Valley that have very high Medi-Cal enrollment rates. So could you go into that a little bit more?
Absolutely. Fresno County actually has the third highest Medi-Cal enrollment rate in the entire state. And this is according to data from California's Health and Human Services Department. 52% of Fresno County residents are enrolled in Medi-Cal. And what that demonstrates, and this is according to health experts who just really told me plainly on the phone, it just means that Fresno County has many people who are low income and they have jobs that do not provide a good private health insurance, which is why they depend on Medi-Cal. And it's not just Fresno County. In the seven California counties that have a majority of residents who are enrolled in Medi-Cal, five of those seven counties are in California's San Joaquin Valley. And Tulare County has a 61% Medi-Cal enrollment rate. We already talked about how Fresno County is at 52%. Merced, Kern, and Madera counties all rank directly after Fresno County in terms of residents who are enrolled in Medi-Cal. It's really, every expert I've spoken to has said that the Central Valley is really going to be grappling with maybe some of the worst impacts of cuts that could be done down the line. Yeah.
Let me jump in and add another layer to this. So California expanded who's covered through Medicaid. There's certain stipulations from the federal government that it includes income levels, but California also expanded it in two ways. It expanded it to undocumented people, which we have a higher proportion here based on our economy, but then also it expanded it in terms of the services, dental and vision, which is not required through federal Medicaid. So it's both our demographics, but also how California has amended the program to meet the needs of its constituents. And so then that creates this situation where you have this really wide net that includes a lot of the different populations here in the Central Valley. Omar, let's talk about some of the ways that are being discussed that Medi-Cal can be cut. And I want to talk in a second about retrenchment, which is an interesting concept here. The policy, how cuts are being framed, and we'll get to that in a second. But why don't you talk about specific policy cuts and what's being proposed?
Yeah, so I think what we have right now is mostly speculation on how cuts could materialize and how essentially what shape they could have. And we've seen everything from, could reimbursement rates be lower, or could there be eligibility requirements that are instituted so that it would limit who's even eligible for Medicaid or Medi-Cal? And one thing that's been tossed around for sure is instituting a work requirement. And I believe experts are out there saying this wouldn't dramatically change things. This wouldn't impact the funding needs that Medicaid or Medi-Cal has. And another thing is, I think a lot of the speculation has to do with, unfortunately, a lot of maybe criticism of Medicaid that isn't maybe based in facts. Obviously, this is an incredibly political issue. And so you've got lots of people on the federal level who are saying people who aren't working are just drawing tons of benefits from Medicaid. People who are undocumented are just like taking safety net programs and social services. When at the end of the day, it's the state that's actually funding a lot of the expansions that we've seen in California. I just got done listening to a Republican lawmaker in Washington talking about how it's undocumented people who are taking all kinds of funding and money from the federal government, and that's not even, it's not even true. And I think a lot of the speculation that is currently circling how this could take shape, it is tied to a lot of the political dialogue that is being waged in Washington.
A lot of the discussion is around fraud. Trump has been using the word fraud a lot lately, and the actual rates of that are pretty low, but it's often a tactic that's used to justify cutting things like Medicaid, in particular because Trump has now absorbed, and we talked about this in our previous episode about election results, Trump's has a wider constituency amongst low-income voters. And so cutting back programs like Medicaid are unpopular. There was a KFF health tracking poll this week that basically showed resoundingly across the aisle that cuts to Medicaid are not supported by most people. And so when you do that, you have to come up with different ways to frame it. And right now it's being framed as fraud, even though that's not really present in what we can see from the data. But that's part of the framing that's going on.
So, Omar, you've talked to several healthcare experts at this point, and you've also been talking with a lot of the health providers here in Fresno County, Valley Children's Hospital, community health systems, I know, or two that you've talked to. Are they expecting that we'll see any shutdowns of health clinics or hospitals at this point if the cuts do go into effect?
Yeah, I think right now having clarity and having a certain idea of what are the exact impacts, I think we're in this lurch right now, similar to what we felt in February when President Trump was talking about a federal funding freeze. Everyone who's, I think, connected to health in some way just doesn't know exactly how this is going to take shape and how this would impact not only patients, but also healthcare infrastructure. And so I think across the board, what I'm hearing is health providers just don't know exactly what's going to happen. But if you just think about the mandate that would be required of this budget proposal, calling on $880 billion to be cut by the House Committee on Energy and Commerce, and they oversee the federal Medicaid program. It cuts of this magnitude are going to be harmful, according to experts. And I think what I can say is that several hospitals in the Fresno area depend on Medicaid and Medi-Cal reimbursements. Essentially, whenever there's a patient on Medi-Cal who goes to a hospital, it's going to be that Medi-Cal health plan that is paying the hospital for coverage, right? And so that means those health providers, those hospitals are depending on reimbursements from Medi-Cal health plans. And so just running through some more data, Valley Children's Hospital, three quarters of their patients in 2023 came in on Medi-Cal health plans. Half of downtown Fresno's community regional medical center, half of their patients came in through Medi-Cal health plans. And just going down the list, like St. Agnes and even Clovis Community Medical Center, both of them had about a quarter of their patients depending on Medi-Cal health plans for coverage. And so what we're seeing is that in terms of a revenue perspective, how health providers even stay in business or stick around to provide key care, Medi-Cal is key in that picture. And another thing that I want to flag is just the overall, like, public health impacts. Let's say people were to get cut off Medi-Cal or kicked off Medi-Cal, it could lead to people being uninsured. And I spoke with the public health director in Madera County, also the public health director in Fresno County. Both of them are really worried about how An increase in folks who are uninsured would mean an increase in folks who are not seeking regular primary care. And primary care is the type of care where you can at least identify serious health conditions early. You can get regular health assessments, and that's really key in identifying conditions that could maybe worsen over time. And if you don't have that type of primary care, which a lot of the times is described as preventative, that could lead to an increased burden on hospital emergency departments and emergency rooms. And when you have that take shape, as one expert told me, emergency rooms are then used as primary care, and their function is not that. And so what we could see, and I think what folks in public health are worried about, is with Medi-Cal cuts or Medicaid cuts, it could lead to less people being insured. It could lead to people's health conditions worsening over time and them not being able to access healthcare properly. And that could then snowball into emergency departments at hospitals being overwhelmed because really healthcare infrastructure is being damaged across the board. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very concerning, especially with the provider shortage we have in the Central Valley. This could just snowball into a genuine emergency. And then emergency rooms are already overwhelmed. And if they're having to triage huge lines of people, that's how mistakes and errors get made. And there's just so much here to unpack. And I think it's going to become a system-wide issue very quickly. What, Omar, what are the politics of this locally? How are people thinking about it here at the local level?
Yeah, so the Central San Joaquin Valley has a handful of elected officials in Washington who represent, and some common names listeners have probably heard of their names before. We've got Representatives Jim Costa and Representative Adam Gray. They're both Democrats. We also have Representatives Tom McClintock, Vince Fong, and David Valadao. Those three are Republicans. In late February, there was a House vote on this budget proposal. McClintock, Fong, and Valadao, all of them voted to move that budget proposal forward. They voted for it, whereas Costa and Gray both voted against it. And what's clear is that folks in Washington are certainly treating this as a political issue. They're sticking to party lines and voting accordingly. One thing in particular, though, is that despite Valadao voting for a budget proposal that would theoretically slash Medicaid, he has openly dissented with fellow Republicans, at least in statements. He has said that his constituents really depend on Medi-Cal and Medicaid funding. And he's gone so far to say he wouldn't support a final budget reconciliation bill that risks leaving his constituents behind. And according to the UC Berkeley Labor Center, I believe it's 67% of Valadao's congressional district are enrolled in Medi-Cal. And that's by far like one of the highest percentages across the country. And I think by and large, not just Valadao, Fong, and McClintock, but by and large, most Republicans in Congress, if they are moving this budget proposal forward, they are going to have to grapple, if they haven't already, with the fact that healthcare infrastructure is at stake here for all of their local communities, especially if they have even a quarter of their constituents enrolled in Medi-Cal. Yeah.
And this is prior to, or sorry, let me restate that. We have already had, in a lot of ways, and Jordan alluded to this earlier, a healthcare infrastructure crisis that's been building. Rural hospital closures are happening across the country, and certainly we saw that in our backyard in Madera not that long ago when their community hospital shut down.
Yeah.
And going back to this issue of rural hospital infrastructure, how does this picture of reimbursement rates around Medi-Cal play into the vulnerability that so many of our healthcare institutions have here locally at the moment?
Yeah, I absolutely right. The situation in Madera County has certainly been seen as a really tough situation. Like once again, we have over 250,000 people in Madera County who have already gone 2 years without a general acute care hospital in their county. And I think one major detail is any health provider that has not only a majority, but even just a plurality of their patients on Medi-Cal will see some sort of impact if Medicaid is cut. In another aspect, and I heard this directly from the CEO of United Health Centers, UHC has more than, I believe they have 34 locations in Fresno, Tulare, and Kings counties, and they provide everything from primary care to urgent care. CEO Justin Preis told me that this could also impact the healthcare workforce. And we've already alluded to the fact that we have challenges in terms of building a robust healthcare workforce in the valley. And I think the trend that I'm just hearing over and over is that Medicaid cuts would only worsen the challenges that we're already grappling with and that we've known about for years and years. So yeah, I think hospitals, rural health clinics, health centers that are facilities that folks on Medi-Cal depend on, that those are the ones that could be impacted the most.
So, Omar, you mentioned this before, but let's dig into it a little bit. California helps to cover the costs of Medi-Cal. Given the budget crisis that the state of California is in, can we be optimistic that they can fill the gap here if we see cuts from the federal level?
I would say the experts I spoke to sounded not optimistic that the state would magically be able to maybe cover 75% of the Medi-Cal program. Right now, according to the California Legislative Analyst's Office, California covers about 50%, roughly 50% of the Medi-Cal program. The other 50%, of course, comes from the federal level. We're talking about $161 billion. That's how big Medi-Cal is in California. It would be hard to see how state lawmakers could figure out coming up with another 80 billion or even 40 billion or even 20 billion. I don't know. I think that's a really challenging thing to stomach. And I think this whole situation is uncertain. Folks have described it as chaotic. And I think it's going to put the state in a tough position moving forward, because will the state have to make some hard decisions about rolling back who is covered by Medi-Cal? Recently, some expansions to Medi-Cal have been made in California. Could that be a question that gets circulated that folks in Sacramento ponder? And it's currently unclear, right? And I think that's maybe one of the harder parts. Some clarity would be helpful. But also, I don't think anyone wants clarity on the fact that Medicaid or Medi-Cal could be cut. And I think one thing that's just worth really emphasizing, California hasn't faced cuts to Medicaid funding before. This is not something the state has been through. It's uncharted territory if actually this gets passed. Congress has a deadline of this Friday to pass a budget. Otherwise, if it doesn't, we go into a government shutdown. The stakes are super high this week, and we just don't know what the future will look like. And we also don't have anything in the past to necessarily have as a frame of reference for what things could look like either. Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to speculate with the Trump administration because things get retracted, reinserted constantly, and used as negotiating tactics. So it's hard to really assess what's going to happen or predict. But I think what we're trying to do here ultimately is give people a vision of what that looks like if it does become manifest. If it comes to fruition, this is what, according to our best judgment, our world could look like. And it's a pretty dark picture so far.
Yeah.
We're going to close this podcast with our favorite segment, which is what we're loving this week. So I'm going to start with Donnie. Donnie, what are you loving this week?
I am loving biking. My bike is back in order. It was to like so many of our bikes during the cold months. It was out of service, and I just got it back and running, and I went biking this weekend, and
Are
it
we
was.
talking beach cruiser, road bike? What are you rocking?
I have a public bike, which is like my street bike that I ride around, and
Okay.
then I have a road bike, but I haven't got that one's still in the garage collecting a lot of mothballs. That one still needs to be serviced. But my son and I rode around yesterday with some of his friends and biked and jumped to people's houses and ran into people as we were biking around the neighborhood. I ran into Congressman Jim Acosta on my bike ride and had a little chat with him about what's happening in DC while we were biking down Van Ness together. That was an
Wow.
interesting
That is a perfect
experience.
moment for you, isn't it?
It really is. And it's such a Fresno thing. If anyone bikes, you will see Jim Acosta riding around town. It is inevitable. He is everywhere.
Omar, what are you loving this week?
Yeah, so I recently started rewatching Avatar: The Last Airbender. And honestly, it's been a great time. The last time I actually fully watched it was when I was like probably 7 or 8. And so I'm seeing everything from a completely different perspective as an adult. And wow, I still love
What's the
Sokka.
difference? I have watched that. What's the biggest difference for you now watching it
I think there was just so much I didn't catch, like so many details, like thematically, for example, you see the progression of Aang as a character side by side with Zuko as a character. And I don't know, I should have caught it when I was 8 years old, but I was like, wow, I didn't remember that they really thoughtfully parallel the two in the same episodes. And I think that's great. And I just love seeing Sokka. I feel like you need to have, maybe Sokka is like painfully unaware of how he comes across, but I feel like he's just so goofy and honest and him. And I think it takes a special kind of confidence to just be boldly yourself. And yeah, I just love how goofy and down to earth Sokka can be. And yeah, always a joy to watch him.
It's funny what holds up. Some movies don't hold up. I was talking about this at work today with somebody, and we were bringing up Disney Channel movies, which I was, versed in. Donnie, do you have a favorite Disney Channel movie from childhood?
I absolutely do. I loved Motocrossed.
Oh,
It
yes.
was the favorite. The soundtrack was excellent. I had a Motocross adoration phase.
I was between Johnny Tsunami and
Oh.
Brink. Brink, I just thought Blades were so cool and the tricks that they did, but I tried to rewatch them and it didn't hold up. So I think some movies can hold up and some don't. What I'm loving this week, I've got two things. One was actually a recommendation I gave to Donnie recently. I'm assuming that a majority of our listeners know about Substack, but if you don't know about Substack, it's basically a revived blogging universe that's in some ways becoming academic or intellectual Twitter, which is fun. I'll scroll through it some days. And I saw someone put on Substack that scrolling through Substack is overdosing on broccoli. It's really good. There's a particular Substack that I recommended, and it's called No Opinion. And it's written by an economist named Noah Smith. And there's a lot of voices right now in all the chaos with the new administration, trying to understand things, trying to put things in context. His voice, Noah's, is one of the ones I trust the most. I would say he's fairly moderate, so I think all kind of political persuasions could learn something from his analysis. And he's got a really great podcast too that's associated with it if you're looking for a more national perspective. So that'd be the first one. The other one that I'm going to recommend is
All We Imagine Is Light.
it was a movie that came out last year that won some stuff at the Cannes Film Festival, but was like disturbingly snubbed in my mind at the Oscars. And it's this beautiful film about three women in Mumbai who are going through each of their kind of own struggles and journeys. And it was incredible. It's on the Criterion Channel, which just makes me the giant nerd in the room, but it is what it is. It's a great movie. You can rent it too. And for me, it was probably the best movie that I saw from 2024 and just absolutely loved it. This has been Fresnolandia. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom. And this podcast was recorded at Sun Stereo Warehouse in downtown Fresno. Audio editing and mixing was done by Jordan Maddox. Our lead image comes from Vaughn Ballinan. And our song comes from Stateless Rat.